Welcome back to the Spirit of Haggard. We are so excited to dive into all things surgery today with our special guest, Dr. Laura Werner. I am your host, Jody Lynch Findley, speaker, podcaster, and coach, and we are going to dive right in with one of my favorite people. Thank you for sitting down with us and contributing to this project. It's gained so much momentum, and you know, our listeners are just hungry for more of this peek behind the curtain, if you will, into what makes up the Spirit of Haggard. And I believe that that is each and every one of you, the family that is Haggard. And telling your individual stories and journeys has really become magic for our listeners that are hungry to learn more about equine veterinary medicine. Some of them are making decisions whether to pursue this as a career. Do they want to be a veterinarian? Do they want to be a part of the allied industries? What opportunities are out there? And so really being able to share some of your journey, some of your choices, the challenges, the successes, that's why we're here. Are you ready?
I'm excited. Okay. No, always good to talk to you. So it's so exciting.
Now, you have done some moving around.
I actually grew up sort of more on the East Coast, okay, and then in Kentucky, and then after schools kind of migrated to the West Coast. So,
so you headed west. Yes. So tell us about some of that journey. Bring us up to speed on who Dr. Laura Werner is by telling us who you were, where you came from.
So I grew up around horses and have ridden since I was five. And seemingly, I think my mom even had indicated in my little baby book, I don't know if people still do those anymore, but my baby book said I wanted to be a veterinarian from when I was a small, you know, as soon as I could speak. And my mom notated that in my baby book that I wanted to be a veterinarian. So kind of stuck with that goal. And I had the opportunity when one of my barnmates' horses needed colic surgery, I got to go with, and that surgeon was really nice in helping me. Like, you know, it was very, unfortunately, we did have to euthanize the horse on the table, but he got me all gloved and gowned up and was showing me things. And so that was really an instrumental portion and me kind of with the goal to going to be a surgeon as just putting my hands, you know, inside this horse was the moment. I think this is what I want to do.
The light bulb moment.
And so I was pretty worked towards that goal. Obviously very, you know, I was very, you know, focused on that goal, and everything I did was pretty clear to try to reach that goal as quickly as I could. And so I did go to undergrad at UK. I did not get an undergraduate degree. I actually got into veterinary school after 3 years of undergraduate. So I was only 20 when I started vet school. I couldn't even get into the bars and such down there.
How do you experience Auburn, Alabama as a 20?
Well, it was a little rough. It was definitely a little rough. I thought one time that we were going to some place called the Supper Club, and I thought, oh, because they serve food that I could get in there. But no, in fact, I couldn't. So I had to wait a few months from when school started till when I turned 21 to be able to get in the bars and, you know, celebrate with my classmates. But it was a little rough, but it made it. So I went to veterinary school at Auburn. And then I did an internship here at Haggard's.
Okay.
And then I went on to do a surgery residency at The Ohio State University. So
your time here at Haggard as an intern, who did you connect with? There were mentors, there were connections that really kind of solidified maybe some of your future.
Yeah. So back then there were only two of us as interns. So now we've got, you know, 15 or upward. There are just two of us in surgery. You know, Drs. Spirito and Dr. Hunt were both here, and they're very different, but they kind of molded us in both of their ways to the way we all do things now, or the way I am now. Sort of, I think each of them provide great insights and tips and tricks, and you know, they do things a little differently, and I think the personalities are a little differently, but I think it kind of molded me into, you know, who I am. And, you know, the fact that I'm back, obviously, it was a tough year with two of us. You know, now we have six recovery stalls. At the time when I first started my internship, we only had two recovery stalls.
Oh, wow.
Long nights and long days. But I mean, it was, I loved surgery, so it was, I wouldn't trade that experience for anything. So, no.
Yeah. And we talk a lot about that, the importance of internships and, you know, whether we choose to do them or choose not to do them and, right. you know, right. how that serves you.
I'm a huge internship proponent. I mean, I was at the university for, you know, during my residency and I stayed on as a clinical instructor afterwards. So I know what these students are exposed to and what they're not exposed to in veterinary school. And I feel like, especially on equine, it's not as much as you need, you know? Yes. And I think, even though, like I said, we provide a quote unquote surgery internship, you know, with me, they're getting different things with all of our doctors. Their practices within Hagard are so different that they get a little bit of everything, radiographs, nerve blocks, you know, jumping horses to race horses. And I think, you know, it's not just surgery. It's actually, I think, a little bit better rounded than you think, you know, and you get so much of it in a short period of time. You know, it's always good for, you know, do one, see one, try one or whatever, but they may, you know, you might, where some other practices, you might get to do one of these. Well, here you might get to do 10, you know, and I think that repetitiveness is really important in your learning process. We have usually one intern with us during a couple week rotation or more. And, you know, we spend a lot of one-on-one time together. And I think that's great, you know, try to do some teaching and mentoring in that time, especially that we have in the truck or here at night, you know, during emergencies. And hopefully, like I said, I think meld them into sort of the surgeon or veterinarian, whatever they want to be, meld them into that, help meld them into that person. And I do enjoy that. You know, mentorship role or teaching role. You know, I think at the university it was a bit frustrating because, you know, most of the students weren't interested in equine or had no practice in equine. And you'd have a handful of students that were, and you try to meld them and whatever. But here, obviously, you know, most of these interns or students that we work with, they really want to be here. So if they want to learn, I am willing to teach them, but you've got to be willing to learn, you know?
Yeah. So you were at Ohio State and stayed on there as an instructor. And so how did that choice happen and how long did you stay there? What did that look like for you?
I stayed there for about a year and a half or almost 2 years. I think we did a master's program as well. So after I finished my residency, I still defended my master's and still did some additional, participated in some additional research opportunities there and stayed on. And so, but the reason I kind of left is it's a little bit with the frustrating with the students, you know, not necessarily wanting to be there. I wanted to be able to have something that was more rewarding. And I think that wasn't quite as rewarding as I wanted to be with the student participation.
Okay.
And also, they were interested in me pursuing a PhD and maybe some additional even board certifications like emergency critical care. And I wasn't sure I was really wanting to do that long term. But it was frustrating with the students, you know, it was, you know, we'd have a small window with them.
And so from Ohio State, where to?
Then I went to a private practice in California and, worked out there and, enjoyed, you know, the lifestyle out there was very good. And I think, at first the surgery caseload was quite good. And then, with economics, just, the cost of living, the cost of land, the cost of everything out there. You know, there were four or five big thoroughbred farms in the area of the practice. And in the time I was there, I think they went down to one. So they closed, went out of business, whatever. And so that surgery caseload really plummeted. And so I did have the opportunity. It was great. I had more opportunity to ride and I had more opportunity to go to horse shows. And so that's how that sort of, I got more involved in the horse show scene, which was good and bad, but I still wanted to be able to do surgery. So that's why I decided to come back here where I have a little bit more opportunity to do more surgeries.
So. Okay. And so I'll take that moment to, you know, kind of veer over here to your riding career and some of your passion as an inventor. And so tell us a little bit about that part of your life is that you have been able to remain involved in horses personally as well as professionally. And let's go ahead and talk about the FEI role.
Sure. So I rode as a child, obviously, but then getting into, you know, in undergraduate, the riding sort of kind of went by the wayside. In vet school, I didn't really ride that much at all. If you want to, whatever, we can get into actually race cars during that time. That was a little easier to,
you
to
and
do
Dr.
down there.
Spirito,
that's was one of our bonding things is the fast cars for sure. So after I finished my, towards the end of my residency, I actually acquired a horse from Ohio State that was a donation horse. Okay. And so he went with me to California and I tried to jump back in and get involved into this, you know, back into the eventing scene. And then I did get my FEI certification as a official FEI veterinary delegate. And so started working in, you know, working as a FEI delegate at some of those shows and getting to work with some of these very obviously elite level, yes, riders and horses.
And that's not easy to do.
No, it's definitely, it's a, you know, and it's, it does, I think, you know, obviously it's a very small, especially in the eventing, it's a pretty small portion, I think, of the horse, you know, there's obviously way more jumpers or dressage horses, I think, than there are 3-day event horses at that level, especially in this country. And so I was very fortunate to work with a rider there that actually was a silver medalist in the 2008 Olympics. Wow. And so, and just being involved in the sport and attending a lot of these competitions and such, it was very difficult for me to get back into. You know, things are a little harder when you're in your 30s versus when you're a younger child. You don't bounce quite as well. And what mom and dad helped pay for, obviously, yes, you know, is like coming out of your own
writing those checks.
Exactly. So
why did you decide to pursue the FEI delegate role? Like what?
I wanted to do something where, you could somewhat kind of give back to the sport. You know, I wasn't really sure where I was going to go at that point in the sport or if I was going to be able to maintain it or get to a level, you know, where, what level I could get to back in the sport. And so, I wanted to do it as a portion of sort of giving back. I mean, as an FEI delegate, it's not a money making venture. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of, you know, tests and sort of, and hoops to jump through. So it's not necessary, but it's a way to sort of be involved in the sport and, right, and, do some good for the sport, I think. And so that's why I wanted to get involved, yeah, with the FEI certification.
And bring your level of expertise as a veterinarian, right, and a participant.
Exactly. Because I do think it's, it helps being a rider. I think it does help being a rider, I think, and being there and knowing what some subtle nuances of riding and horses, what's bothering a horse or what's, you know, not quite, you know, according to a rider. I think it does help to have that knowledge and that background. So I think that's helped carry through for, like I said, for what I do as a vet, as well as the FEI sort of career. And certainly by no means I don't do that much as a FEI anymore.
Let's pause for just a minute to hear from our friends at Bimeda, our Spirit of Haggard podcast sponsor.
Bimeda might just be the largest animal health company you have never heard of until now. Bimeda Animal Health's equine products have been trusted by veterinarians and horse owners since the 1960s, where our Irish roots began. Bimeda is one of the largest producers of dewormers for horses like Equimax, Bimectin, Duramectin, and Exodus. World-renowned equine athletes rely on polyglycan, a patented formula designed to replace lost or damaged synovial fluid, and Confidence Ec 1% pheromone gel that reduces and prevents equine stress, to name a few of our branded products. We encourage you to consult with your equine veterinarian before using any equine products for your horse. Also, please visit buymetaus.com to learn more about our full product offerings and where you can buy them.
As a surgeon, talk to us a little bit about what your areas of passion are. I think that feeds into.
Right. So I think my, obviously I like lameness and some, and sport horses as well too, but I do like emergency surgery. I do enjoy colics and C-sections. I think colics are always exciting because it's like Christmas. You just never know what you're going to quite open up, you know? And so I do enjoy that pace and the uncertainty of emergencies and colics, but also the rewarding part of it too, when you know have, you know, a hopeless looking situation and it turns out not so bad. So right. I do enjoy the emergency surgery portion that I get to do. So.
And that is unique. Not everyone enjoys emergency surgery for the long term.
Correct.
Okay. With your colleagues that are especially field care associates, we talk a lot about the seasonality of working in Central Kentucky. What does that look like for a surgeon?
For most surgeons, I think it's a little, so the busiest season is probably from about January till June. So in that A lot of the surgeons, we're doing obviously a lot of emergency surgeries, but also angular limb correction or arthroscopic surgeries on these younger horses that are with intentions of going to the sale. My season is a little bit different because we have the breeding season that's obviously from January till June, but then the show season starts. So most of these horses, a lot of them are south in Florida or elsewhere, Aiken somewhat, and they'll start sort of migrating their way back here in April to be here through the show season. So April through June is just really seriously busy for me because we've got not only the emergencies and those type of surgeries going on, but everyone's coming back from elsewhere to this, locating to this area to sort of start the show season. So my season, I think, is a little bit different than a lot of these guys because it's pretty busy through the summer into I think November and December are quiet months.
Yeah, about the only quiet times about that
the
you're
only quiet
getting
times here. Yes.
And
yes.
What does your travel look like? Are you still maintaining two homes? Are you competing?
So I do usually travel to Florida for a few weeks in the winter, not only to work for a lot of my clients that are down there, but also to try to compete myself. And I do travel to some of the bigger competitions in the U.S., but usually I travel to some of the big events. So some of the larger three-day events that they have in Tryon and larger three-day events they have now at Maryland at Fairhill. So I usually do travel with clients to those competitions to help support them during those big, pretty important qualifying competitions for
them.
So.
And I ask those questions because our listeners are always interested in, we talk a little bit about balancing life and how to have this career as an equine veterinarian. And also, am I still going to get to ride? Do I still get to travel and have a family and do all these things? So I think it's important to our listeners that they hear that you are doing those things.
Right. I think it's some sacrifices on timing. It's sometimes it's, very early morning rides or late rides or, okay, I can't get there today because I'm on call. Can the trainer or someone else, ride the horse to keep it in condition for what I'm doing, especially now that I'm competing at a higher level.
And so was there ever any choice that you made as you moved around, you did your travel, you were in California, the decision to come back to Haggard specifically? Why Haggard? Why are you here?
Well, I guess I'm a glutton for punishment because I was, but I do, I love the area and I did love the people I work with. And, during our internship, it was a family environment to me. It was, each of the surgeons really just with the two of us. I mean, we were at their house for dinner. They brought us food. It was just a very family environment. Even some of the, now somewhat retired, but some of the older veterinarians that were here, it was a very family oriented, I thought, practice. Yeah. I really, they took care of us, not just, physically, like I said, making sure we had food or, and such, but just in the mentorship too. And so I did, I was pretty excited to come back and I have not regretted it at all. So.
And what advice would you give to students who are listening and they have some interest in pursuing a career in equine veterinary medicine? Maybe it is surgery. Maybe they don't know. What advice would you give?
I think definitely as, we have more and more undergraduate interns or undergraduates that are coming to visit. We have undergraduates that ride with the veterinarians and work as technicians for them during the season, which is really interesting. I think three of the interns we had this past class were riders with the veterinarians in the field. So I think get out there, find someone who, can mentor you, whether it's at a big practice or a small practice or a rural practice or a city type thing. Find someone that you connect with and hopefully can mentor along. Like right now we've got an intern that just started that's been externing with us every year for the past, while she's been in veterinary school. So I'm quite excited to have her. She's got kind of a show horse background like I do. And so I'm really excited, to mentor her along the way. But I think find someone that you connect with and that you can, and try to stick with that. But I do, like I said, I'm a huge internship proponent, if you're a student, a veterinary student, go visit different practices, try to see where you most fit in. Like I said, some people obviously want a small practice. I didn't mind the bigger practice. And I think there's some advantages with on-call schedules as well as having a camaraderie with your intern mates versus that you maybe not have it if you're with a practice of one or two interns. But find what works for you. Find an area that you like. You know, yeah. I certainly went to visit some practices that were in the Midwest that I thought there's no way I could survive here for a year, even just a year. So I think find an area that you like. Find, you know, and obviously with horses, there's some areas that are more congested with horses than not. But find an area that you like. And then, like I said, try to find a mentor, you know, just sometimes the big practices, like I said, are good because we have so many different specialists. Do you like to do ophthalmology? Do you like to do radiology? Do you like surgery? And there's just more opportunity to see different things and find what niche might work for you.
Be an explorer.
Exactly.
Yeah. So explore those opportunities, ask good questions, find people. The other question that I would have for you, in a geography that is so focused on the thoroughbred and people, you know, they hear Lexington, Kentucky or Central Kentucky and they think thoroughbred and racehorses, you have maintained, you know, such a passion for the sport horse. And that has continued to grow, I feel like, so much through your tenure here and even the last decade that I have been here. So how have you remained really focused and successful on the sport horse side of the business in a, you know, very thoroughbred?
Well, I think the sport horse has grown. I mean, you can just go down the main roads here and see how many previous thoroughbred farms are now sport horse farms.
Yes.
The same thing. There's, you know, very similar geographically in like Ocala, Florida. It's primarily was a very heavy thoroughbred area. Now the farms are, everyone's adding riding, you know, is adding a, you know, a nice riding arena. And so a lot of those farms that sort of sat vacant for a long time have been sold to sport horse. So you can see sort of there is a change a little bit in some of the geographic areas. And obviously they change according to where the competitions are. And so the Lexington, obviously with the Kentucky Horse Park, has maintained that, runs different shows of all different genres, hunter jumper, dressage, 3-day eventing. I think they had a quarter horse show 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, so they are maintaining that, you know, as a central location for it. And people like to come here. You know, it's not just, there's, you know, some other locations maybe, but people want a destination. They want restaurants and, you know, fun things to do besides just showing your horse.
Right.
That, you know,
as I say, to eat, drink, and be merry.
Yes. And so Kentucky does provide, you know, and so I think that that's attractive to people.
I think that is oftentimes what our message is to young people and interested students and young professionals is the equine industry is strong and it is here. It is ever evolving. And we know that there are changes occurring, but it's a rewarding career.
It is. I think, and like I said, it's, I think, you know, some people have the passion for horses and sometimes you just don't, you know, and I think there's the few of us that are in it have always had the passion for horses. It's probably not going to, you know, it's there, it's genetic, right. It's whatever, it's ingrained in you. And so it's, you know, I don't see myself really doing anything else. I don't think I'd be happy doing anything else because I'd want to be involved with horses somehow, some way.
Right.
And, so I think, like I said, I've delved into it. That's my, you know, passion, not only work, you know, but also, like I said, outside of work, that's my passion. So
I often will say, you know, there have been times in my career that I've had, you know, a little bit of a shift and maybe I'm on food animal versus horse, or I'm on companion animal versus horse in my career path. I always end up back in horse. And I always just joke, I'm like, I'm that crazy horse girl. You naturally have a magnetism towards your people.
Yes.
And these are my people.
Yes. Yes. So, I don't think I love my dogs and I love my cats, but I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm a horse person, I think, at most.
Yes. So what's your favorite part of equine veterinary medicine?
My favorite part? I don't know. I really enjoy, like I said, I think sometimes I always say, like, I live vicariously through my clients or my patients. So to me, like, some of it that makes me the happiest is seeing a horse go on. Like, just this past year, I had a client, one of my clients from California that I've known for a very long time, worked with for a very long time, and she was the first American to win the Kentucky 5-star in like 28 years.
Yes.
She's also been the first woman to win the competition in quite a long time too. So like I said, to me, it's sort of living through them. But to me, the best part of it is seeing those patients or clients go on to such successful things, whether it's winning a race or, you know, something, you know, seems like a hopeless, you know, broodmare, and she foaled the next year successfully, or foaled that year successfully, or, you know, like I said, some of these clients that go on to win these big competitions or go on to the Olympic team, or that makes me the happiest, is seeing my clients and patients' successes. That's my like reason for keeping going and staying up late at night and all this travel or whatever. And that's what makes me happy.
I love that. And, you know, it is the Kentucky Horse Park. There's another kind of source of magnetism. I will always remember the very first picture I have of myself at the Kentucky Horse Park. I was 11 or 12 years old. And I think it started then. That was probably when I said, well, this is where I'm going to be. And you are referring to, you know, what is now the Land Rover Kentucky 3-day event, previously Rolex. That's my favorite weekend all year. That is their hashtag, but it truly, we see each other often there because I will move into the horse park for that weekend because it is so much energy and there's so much passion. And I think I see that in you anytime that either one of us are there.
Yes, it's a lot of work, but it is also one of my favorite times of year.
Let's take a quick break to recognize our Spirit of Haggard podcast sponsor, Bimeda.
Bimeda might be the biggest animal health company you've never heard of until now. Bimeda's products have been trusted by veterinarians and owners since the 1960s when our Irish roots began. Bimeda is one of the largest producers of dewormers like Equimax, Bimectin, and Exodus. World-renowned equine athletes also rely on polyglycan, a patented formula that replaces lost or damaged synovial fluid in Confidence X pheromone gel, which reduces and prevents equine stress. Consult your vet and visit buymedaus.com to see where to buy.
And so on the flip side of that question, what is your least favorite part of equine veterinary medicine?
And that is, I think, that is seeing, you know, someone's, like I said, just the same rider like last year, seeing her hopes and dreams and the horse's owner, seeing those go from, you know, this horse has the opportunity to probably do the biggest competition for the team to it's injured and she's looking at probably a career as a broodmare down the road, or, you know, so it's that, you know, we don't have a solution to fix this, or we don't, you know, I don't like not fixing things. And so unfortunately we do end up with, you know, some cases like that, you know, but I certainly like to try and give it time and whatever. But certainly that's probably the worst part, is just when we don't have a solution to a problem.
Yes. Yeah. And that's hard.
It is hard.
Hard to communicate that to clients and...
Right. It's hard. It's just, you know, obviously science keeps evolving and certainly we have more and more options. And someday, you know, maybe we'll have solutions to all these problems. But, you know, right now...
Then there'll be other solutions.
There'll be other problems, that we right. Don't have but I think horses are definitely, you know, as big as they are delicate creatures sometimes. And so it's that's probably the worst. It's just the heartbreak of seeing some of these... You know, not being able to fix things, or seeing someone's hopes and dreams just crushed, and you know, and I've certainly had that myself. You know, it's hard. I've certainly had a few disasters with my own horses. That you know, it's hard.
The nature of the game,
the reality,
right?
So it can go very, very high to very low at the same time. So
yeah, without a doubt. What else, you know, as we wrap up with you and really kind of share your journey and your story, and it's so unique. What else would you share with our listeners that, you know, might encourage the next person to say, I can do this?
Yeah. I think don't be afraid of hard work. I think people, you know, look for sort of the easy out, and we're all looking for an easier lifestyle or easier, you know, and I think, but it's, if you want to work on these elite level horses, it's not going to be by going to bed early or quitting early every day, you know? So I think and certainly there's plenty of people that I think, you know, backyard horses, that's great for them, but that's not what I like to do. You know, I like to be a part of the whole team approach. And I think, you know, you've got to work hard and put in the hours and put in the time to be there.
Great advice. The only thing we didn't talk about is that you're a race car driver.
Well, I was a former race car driver, I guess. Okay. So there wasn't a lot of horse riding, or at the time in Auburn, it's changed a lot back then, but there was a lot of car things available. So my dad was into cars, and so I kind of got into that. So the car racing, and by no means on any professional level or such, but somewhat maybe questionable legality, maybe racing and, you know, whatever, but yes, but that's,
and I what did. Type of racing?
So it was mostly like autocross or I don't know what it's called. It was like performance, like it was like different, it's changed different names. But anyway, I was friends with a lot of engineering students down there at Auburn that were, so we kind of, and actually some of them, that's, they've made their career out and sort of had a, went from all this sort of doing more backyard racing to their doing a more professional thing and actually run a performance and auto tuning, huge company now. And we all started out sort of in the grassroots, but obviously then I still have sort of a little car that I could race, but unfortunately it's riding or racing. There's just time and money is in a dream world. I could do both, but unfortunately I've picked one. So right now it's the riding. I'm hoping maybe someday, maybe when I'm too old to ride, that maybe I can do racing, much like Dr. Spirito is obviously racing.
Into
his
we talked a little bit about that in the episode with Dr. Spirito. Yes. So our listeners can go back and kind of hear that shared passion. Yes. Apparently there's just a lot of, you know, fast cars that are in common with the surgery team here at Haggard.
Yes. Yes. I think it's much like cross country riding. I think it's a bit of adrenaline.
Yes.
Sort of seeking adrenaline rush sort of. Yes. But that's where definitely Dr. Spirit and I bonded. I think initially it was the car, passion for cars and preferably like German European car type things.
So. Okay.
But Dr. Spirit has a very expensive, fun car right now versus mine is obviously not probably my horse. Maybe is cost as much as his car, but right. I have, you know, but maybe someday I'll get back into it. And I'd like to, it's a, you know, yeah. I love following like the Formula One racing and such like that.
Well, and I bring those things up because I, and you know this about me, I just love to share that you are more than an equine veterinarian. Yes. Your life is filled with horses, but you also have other interests and passions and you have time and you know, live a very fulfilled life.
Yes, that is, I would say, yes, I do. Yeah. I'm happy where I am and what I get to do. And, you know, I think I'm, like I said, I'm very, in my riding and competing, I'm very proud of the Haggard family. You can spot me from a mile away. I have all my Haggard logo. You know, I'm very proud of,
yes.
of being part of Haggard and that family. And you can, like I said, you can spot me with all my logo gear on or my stall has all the colors. Those have been my colors. The navy and red of Haggard, have been my colors for eventing actually since I've been a small child. So it just worked out just perfect that everything I owned was already colored in
perfectly.
The Haggard colors.
I love that. And, you know, so our listeners can connect with you. I always like to share that head to the website. Yes. Haggard.com, head to the website. They can reach you. I think your email is listed there.
Correct.
And any other ways that they might follow you or seek you out?
I have an Instagram. Is L Werner DVM on my Instagram. I try to, like, obviously with my writing such, post a lot of that on there when it's happening. This year it's going to be a little slim. Also, I try to do, I think it started during COVID, but I have a culinary page. I do like to cook. I think maybe in a separate life, I would be a chef that involves cutting things as well too. and so I do have a culinary page, which sometimes obviously during this time of the year is there hasn't been as much posted on there and certainly during COVID, but I do enjoy cooking. And so that's another Galloping Gourmet 859 is my
Galloping Gourmet 859
yes.
on Insta.
Yes. So
okay.
maybe as we get a little less busy coming up, there'll be more posted on there. But it's
okay.
been a little lacking the past during the
I love
busier
there
seasons.
Are a few of you here in Team Haggard that are pretty darn good as it relates to being cooks, chefs,
I do agree. I think there are a few. It gets a little, I mean, I'm a competitor. And so it does get a little bit, I'm like, well, look at this. You know, there's particular, I won't name names, but yes, there's a few that are quite accomplished, I'd say. Yes. And somehow seem to have more time than I do. Veterinarians must eat. But like I said, and cut things. So
yes,
it's the same. And cut things.
There we go.
It's very good. Yeah.
Awesome. It has been so fun to sit down with you. Anything
yes.
else that you would share with our listeners as we depart today?
No, just please come visit us or come find me at one of the three-day events. I think we always get some great students involved in some of our activities at either three-day events or retired racehorse projects. So just come visit, introduce yourself, and love to chat.
Absolutely. So yes, please reach out, come visit. It's www.haggard.com. And I'm your host, Jody Lynch Findley. And so Dr. Werner, thank you so much for being here today as we wrap up this episode of The Spirit of Haggard. And we will say cheers, and we will see you for the next episode of The Spirit of Haggard.
Thanks so much, Jody.
Thanks for tuning in to the Spirit of Haggard podcast today, sponsored by Bimeda. I'm your host, Jody Lynch Findley, speaker and podcaster. You can connect with me at jodyspeakslife.com.